Before we jump in today, I want to warn you, this is a tough one. If you've ever wondered how your private struggles connect to real-world harm and what men in recovery can do to fight back, this episode will change the way you see purity, justice, and responsibility. My guest is Joe Madison from Demand Disruption, and he's here to expose a truth most people never see. Human trafficking doesn't start with traffickers. It starts with buyers. And whether we realize it or not, what men consume privately shapes what happens publicly. If you care about purity, healing, justice, and following Christ into the light, you're going to want to lean into this episode. Let's get started. All right, welcome back to the Purity Podcast, brought to you by Castamonia. Please go to castamonia.org and check out all the things we have to offer there. It's a super great ministry, and if you don't know about it, you need to get to know about it. Hey, today I'm honored to have a powerful guest whose work directly intersects with the fight for purity, integrity, and the freedom of those caught in the cycle of exploitation. So I'm sitting down with Joe Madison, founder of Demand Disruption. This is an organization dedicated to combating human trafficking by targeting the demand side. That's the buyers. Joe and his team work to expose hard truths, reduce demand, and change cultural attitudes around exploitation. This conversation is one that every man pursuing recovery needs to hear. Joe, welcome. I thought maybe we could start this episode. We'll kick off the episode here in a second, but I was kind of thinking maybe do four segments. I want to hear your story about how demand disruption started, maybe understand a little bit about demand and why it matters. And the third section will be about what demand disruption actually does. And then lastly, just this hope, healing, and what men can actually do. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks for having me on, Chris, man. This is something I've been looking forward to. Let's go.
Yeah, man. I'm super excited that you're here, too. I get to hear you speak at the Castamony Men's Retreat back in 22. I think we decided it was 2022. Is that right?
That sounds about and, right. Yeah. Time is a vague construct these days. I have no real basis in it.
sadly, what I base all my time on is my disclosure dates. So I can pretty much tell you anything that's happened between September 30th of 2018 and today.
Now, that is a professional segue right there. That's how you start a podcast about disclosure and about empathy and transparency.
That's right. Oh man. Well, I remember you being on that. We will start with the segments, or maybe we won't. Maybe we won't even get to the four segments, but I remember it was really powerful when you were there sharing with the men, because I don't think we really have a healthy understanding of this demand, right? That men maybe just say, well, I'm not out there trafficking anybody, and I'm not out there, maybe some guys would say, I'm not even going out there with prostitutes. I'm not spending any money on prostitutes. So I want you to kind of flesh that out for us a little bit, because this is really powerful what you talked about and how you shared that. So we'll get to that. Sorry, I probably should just jump right in with kind of your story and maybe tell me, like, what was the moment or experience that opened your eyes to the need for demand disruption?
Okay, I'm going to start this with a story. So I founded Demand Disruption in my infinite wisdom at the very end of 2019, right before COVID. So great timing, awesome. Pops. Yeah, good job. Good job, Executive Director. But it was really out of the roots, out of an experience I had with a man named Bo Abdullah. I think you may know Bo. Mm-hmm. Bo overcame a life of pornography, struggle, sex buying. And while he was never arrested or any of that, he did have to come to terms with it. And I did not ever think that I would work with buyers. Very early on, we were in house church. So we did church with about five other families. We'd go to each other's houses. We'd laugh about how we got four locations and we all own our churches. But we really got to get into understanding not just the word, but how it directly intertwines with the society around us that we're living in. What better way to try to figure out how to impact it, right? So as we are going through some of this, one of the one of the couples was like, and talking about human trafficking and how they used to be missionaries in Southeast Asia. And I started talking about it as that thing that was happening over there. And after probably the third time I referenced it in that regard, and let's go back, this is probably, whoa, this is probably 10 years ago. I said, yeah, it is happening there, but it's happening right here. Like, I can take you down the street and show you a place. And I think anybody who's done anti-trafficking work remembers the first time they heard that. And it's crystallized because my level of ignorance was exceeded only by my shock and surprise that I didn't know this. Like, I'm from the hood. I grew up in a bad neighborhood. I understand what street violence is. I understand what certain things are. Had no idea there were over 350 brothels in Houston. I didn't know people were trafficked and prostituted out of strip clubs. I didn't know these things. So I got this awareness through an organization called Elijah Rising, a faith-based organization here in Houston. My wife and I served together, and we're serving. I started to get kind of on fire for it. And then I tell a guy, I think I told the story at the retreat. I tell it a lot. But I told this guy that I was volunteering with, and it's like, man, I keep getting thank yous. And I'd say, oh, you're welcome for the people that we present to and the volunteer work we do. And then I started getting women saying, no, but we don't see any men in this work. There's never any men. It's always women who volunteer. So thank you specifically. And I told this guy, we were actually his house church. We were in his kitchen. I said, man, I feel like if I could stop working, that there's more need to do this, and I might be called to do it. Well, I was in oil and gas. I got laid off about 6 weeks later. I remember telling him that, and he goes, well, you said it in church. What are you going to do about it? And that's the question I was asking myself. What am I going to do about it? And as I'm volunteering, I told my wife when I got laid off, I don't think I'm supposed to go back to work. You know, when you're in sales for 25 years, you've been oil and gas sales and others, you make a few phone calls, you have a few leads, and you're right back into it. You can get let go pretty easy, but you can also find a spot pretty easy if you're good at it. Well, I told my wife, I don't think I'm supposed to go back into work. I think I'm supposed to just volunteer. I'm called to do this. And then just let me give you a kind of perspective of the contrast between a man who has a woman he can say that to, and what I'm about to tell you her response was, and the contrast between the men that we work with who are broken and struggling and don't have that relationship, sometimes to a fault of their own, sometimes not. I tell this woman, who I am the sole breadwinner, the primary breadwinner, she did some PRN work as a nurse, I don't think I'm supposed to go back and earn a living anymore. I think I'm supposed to go volunteer to fight human trafficking. He says, what do you mean? I said, I think I'm just supposed to, your guy called me. She's like, okay, I'll go back to work. That was it, man. Like that. And this is a woman who handles our finances and worries about, where the money's coming from next. Not a hesitation. And sure enough, she did. So she went, and so for the next year, I worked for no income, just really trying to understand. Because here's what I kept struggling with, Chris. How do I know about it? How do we know it's here? And how do we drive by it and see a brothel right next to a barbecue place or next to a strip club or next to a church 500 yards away in this city that I think I know, and it still thrives? How? That was the capital project manager in me going, I don't understand how this works. My previous life was like, you need to understand this. So I start trying to deconstruct it. So I spent time with the women, the service organizations who are serving the women who are trafficked and exploited. I spent time, I remember sitting in a restaurant slash bar on Bissonnette talking to the bar owner about what he sees. And he's like, yeah, the guy over there, pimps. They're the pimps. Well, I knew that meant trafficker at this point. I spent time talking to buyers, and I decided I'm never going to work with buyers. They're the evil ones. They're the ones who are fueling this. And I talked about that ignorance earlier. Well, there it is on full display. What I didn't realize was a buyer is a person at the end of a broken process, acting out and lashing out from an internal struggle that is harming themselves and others.
Hey, let me interrupt you real quick right there, because This is probably obvious to everybody else. I'm a guy that has to take off a shoe to count to 11, so maybe I'm the slow one. But when you say buyers, explain who is the buyer. What do you mean by that? Just it's probably obvious to everybody listening, but I'll just in case there's somebody out there that like me that would be like, what does that mean? I know what it means now, but when it was first, when you first talked about it on that retreat, I was kind of like, not sure I'm following this. Tell me.
No, I appreciate the chance to clarify that. In fact, I was kind of going there because the way I started in this was somebody after I was volunteering, I was actually at a trauma-informed training, learning about, how to have a conversation with somebody who's going through this type of trauma, how to handle that, how to approach it. And one of the people that I'd come to know, Paul comes up to me, she's pulling on my shirt, man. She's like 4 foot nothing. I'm 6'4". She's like, you got to come with me. You got to meet this guy. And so I meet this guy, Bo. And what I learned very early on is that, yes, buying does happen on the street, happens in hotels, it happens in brothels. But I also learned, if you look up the word buyer, let's say Webster's Dictionary, it says buyer, but it also says consumer. And you can consume without reaching for your wallet. And this industry, in many ways, relies on that. So a buyer is somebody who generates a need for supply. We're talking about supply and demand. But I think people stop too soon when they say that. It's almost like this economic model that everyone's familiar with. There, we made the point. No, we got to go further. The person who says, I'm not buying sex on the street, so I'm not part of the problem, or I'm not paying for, let's scale it down to something much more common. I'm not paying for a pornographic website. You're saying some of these women are exploited or there's some bad things happening. I'm sorry about that. But I'm not funding it. So I'm just watching porn. It's not a big deal. It's just, I'm a guy and I'm consuming that. It's free. I get that. I've struggled with porn for years. Before I even knew about trafficking, like, let's go way back to just the guy in America with some red blood in my veins thinking, well, this is normal. It's sex. I like sex. Here it is for free. What I came to realize was this, and the best way I can explain it is, Chris, how much did you pay for your last Google search?
Yeah,
Last
I
time you
didn't.
searched something?
Yeah, I didn't.
Nothing. Did you get something for that search? You
I
got
did.
knowledge you didn't have otherwise? You got direction somewhere? You got something that made you seem or feel smarter? You didn't pay anything. That's free, but then how is Google one of the most powerful, affluent, influential, world-changing organizations on this planet? Because you're a consumer, you became a customer. And on another end of that economic spectrum, now if I want to go and improve my SEO, or I want to have ads on some of the pages and sites that Google founded, then they're making money off of that because they have billions of customers that don't pay anything. Don't worry about that. We're going to make our money on the advertisement, on the back end, all of that. The same is true for the
Good
porn industry. It
example.
took them a while to figure it out, but the porn industry got there and realized, oh, let's just give it away, because they realized, now we've got customers, we've got consumers, we're going to make hundreds of billions of dollars on ad revenue, among other things. So when you ask me about buyers, I want to respectfully illustrate men who do go and buy sex and are fueling human trafficking. Because the fact is, that's happening thousands of times a day in Houston. And those numbers are conservative. But once we really understand how they got to the point of wanting to buy and deconstruct that, something I call the escalation dynamic, that I'm sure we'll get into, they didn't start there. They started somewhere else. The demand started with consumption, oftentimes free, oftentimes pornography, and then the escalation. Well, that was nice. What else can I have? What else can I have? I've had men at the point of arrest, men in my classes say, I got greedy. I wanted more. I thought, this is nice. What else can I have? And they describe a process that takes them all the way to consumption, to the point of it's legal, it's practically free or very inexpensive, and I'm the boss. I have control. So that's
That's
how I
good.
would describe it.
Let me ask you this real quick, because this is it's interesting to me. You described, like, you drive down the street and you're seeing all these things are happening right there in front of you. I mean, there's also poverty and homelessness and all these things. What was it, do you think, about this particular industry that personally or spiritually motivated you to take a step here? I mean, there's so many other places you could, probably other places that would be easier, probably places where you'd get more applause for what you're doing and, wouldn't be looking over your shoulder at times wondering if somebody's going to come after you. So there's safer options, I guess, is what I'm saying. So what was it? I mean, is there anything that you can pinpoint, or was it just these conversations that you'd had with people in your church groups and your home groups?
I've been doing conversations and interviews for close to a decade, and I've always gotten the questions to this point, but I've never gotten that follow-up. Why this in particular? And it wasn't through any personal experience of my own. Never been in a strip club. The most simple way I can say it is called. I mean, God could have called me anything. He could have. These people could have in our church talked about trafficking. I could have said that's terrible. But what instead we said was, "Tell me more. Tell me more. Where? What do you mean here? Where here? How do we find out more?" And within a week, we were connected with a friend at Elijah Rising, who we ended up working with, my wife and I, as a team for their van tours. But God could have just as easily called me to something else, or He could have called me and I could have ignored it. And I think that's, we forget in this world that will lie to us and make us the king and God of our own world and make us individuals. What we don't realize is this world is putting a ceiling on actually what our true worth and capabilities are. When we tap into what God would have for us, we are supernatural. We're literally beyond the world, and that's what He called us to be.
Yeah, that's so good. When you first started this and you started talking, you're talking about confronting buyer behavior and things, what kind of reactions did you get from whether it's churches or communities or even men's groups? Like what was the reaction?
So when I met Bo, we started early on. It was clear he wanted to talk to churches. And what I didn't realize is he'd been trying for about 2 or 3 years. And I sympathize with churches. I work with a lot of them now. We've got some great relationships. But for a guy to say, "I'm a former buyer and I want to talk to your congregation about pornography," 10 years ago, churches just weren't there for the most part. Well, how do I bring that up? What if we're shaming people? What if we're bringing up something that would cause people to not come to our church anymore? There are some very real considerations when it comes to that. Then we started really having conversations tying it together to trafficking, because the more he talked about that, the more I was seeing my experience for that year leading up to it. God, man, he knows what he's doing. I thought I was going to kick in doors, Chris. Like, I'm a big guy. I'm going to kick in a door. I'm going to carry people out. Then we're going back in for more. Like, what an idiot. But that's what I thought my use was. Instead, God put me in the year of understanding the cycle. And as we understood the cycle and we began to become more and more involved, I realized, wait, it's not that at all. It's not even close to that. And that is really what's proven out over the last decade.
So, I love the name Demand Disruption. What was the thought around that? Like, where did the name come from and the concept of demand disruption? What is that? Where'd that come from?
I will never get tired of telling the story. So we were Love People, Not Pixels for a while.
You were
We were
what
called
was it?
Love People, Not Pixels.
Okay. I
That's
love
what.
it.
So
That's
that
funny.
became that's like the third name. I give Bo a hard time all the time. I won't tell you the first two, but when he got involved, my son was a professional. He graduated from U of H Wolf Center with honors and worked on creating design and company image, so to speak. And so he talked to Bo, and the tagline was "Love People, Not Pixels." And he said, "That's your name," because we were talking to people about how pornography becomes this barrier to actual intimacy and connection. Well, we kind of outgrew that, and by we, I mean our followers, our volunteers. We call them defenders. A long time ago, I've seen that a few times in different orgs, and I love it because we need an army of defenders. We don't need a logo of defenders. We need everybody to defend. And so as we were kind of getting closer to this, Bo was called back to the mission field. I took over as executive director of Love People Not Pixels. And from that, I founded Demand Disruption, as I mentioned, at the end of 2019, 2020. Well, we had a naming contest. We had about eight names. And we put that out there for a volunteer. He thought, you're doing the work. You're the reason we're changing the name. Help us. And what I love about it is demand disruption was, there were a few different versions of it. When I was at camp with demand disruption, I was inspired by others that Bo and Christian were saying, my son, my oldest son. And so we put it out there. But I also love, disrupt, defend. Three words. Very unique title, but I love that. And we put it in there as well, you know, about five other names. Well, demand disruption finished first, and the love disruptive thin finished second, and that became our tagline. So
love it. Yeah.
It's a very, it's something led by our volunteers. It's inspired by their work, and the work that we were doing in anti-trafficking just continued to grow and grow and grow. And so disrupting the demand that fuels trafficking was the heart of our work. The heart of the work that our volunteers were doing, the relationships we have with municipalities and our faith community and private industry. And so demand disruption means two things. It is, we are demanding the disruption of this cycle, and this is demand disruption.
Yeah, I love it. That's awesome. Why is this conversation important, like, or particularly critical, I guess, for men pursuing sexual integrity? I mean, that's what this podcast is really about, right? We're not an anti-trafficking podcast, although I love this conversation because I think it does have an influence, or it, I think there is some interest of around this topic and for sexual integrity. So what is that? Why is it critical for men seeking and pursuing sexual integrity?
Yeah, I mean, an unwanted sexual behavior is an expression that most men couldn't even form with their mouths and say out loud. Like, they live in a culture, and I'm not blaming culture. I am casting this image of what we are in, the oxygen we breathe, the sight line when our phones are in our hand, when our computers are on, and we're watching TV. As a man in our culture, we constantly are seeing a representation that is sexualized and gives us access to something that after a while, yeah, why wouldn't I want that? I'm a man. That's my type, that girl there. And then we continue to go down a road of objectifying, but we don't put a word to it. Understanding demand, understanding what that means from a trafficking perspective is one thing. Understanding it from a personal sexual integrity standpoint is quite another, but they intersect. One of the greatest influencers of an unwanted sexual behavior, a broken process, whatever you want to call it, is pornography. This is not news. This is not the first time someone's going to hear that, but I want you to listen closely. If you're listening to this and you've heard that many times, we have to understand that if the average age of first exposure to pornography is 9 years old, and I did say average, right? I'm no math wizard, but you can't get to nine without an average of lower numbers. If that is the case, we have to ask ourselves, how is this happening? And then we have to ask ourselves, not, okay, that's bad, icky, you shouldn't have seen that. You've got to understand the brain that tried to process that. You've got a nine-year-old child with no sexual point of reference. They're not a sexual being at all. They're nine, right? They're seeing something that is graphic, shocking, scary, interesting somehow on some level. And it's seared in your brain because your brain knows how to take in new experiences and try to make sense of it. It doesn't mean it always makes sense of it. So I'm 9 years old and I see this thing. And I'm thinking after a while, maybe that's what a boy does in a relationship because I don't know anything. And what is that? Well, it's graphic sexual activity. It is somebody doing something to someone in almost every scene, not sharing something with someone. That representation is not the first impression.
Yeah.
And that's tragic.
Yeah.
And then you layer that with the fact that a girl seeing pornography at 9 years old might start thinking, well, that's what I should expect in a relationship. Man, it's not a phenomenon that we move forward 3, 4, 5 years. We've got something called the timeline of exploitation. We created it because we're having these conversations over and over with grandparents, with parents, with kids, with you name it, teachers, whomever, caregivers. We were talking with them, and they were all kind of asking the same questions. And I thought, this is one of the rare times that people are asking the same question, but they're different age, race, nationality, you name it. Why is that? And so I had to bring it down to some common point. And so we developed this timeline and understood, well, if they're seeing it at 9, is there any wonder why teen sex violence, teen dating violence is at an all-time high? Why we're seeing in college youth this depression directly related to sexual-based images and graphic consumption, and why we're seeing, based on a number of different surveys and divorce attorneys, honestly, unfortunately, they're the most reliable source in this regard, how pornography and betrayal experiences wrecking marriages at an incredibly rapid pace, even outpacing financial arguments. So, now sexual integrity, what I just talked about was wreckage all around and how it's acted out on somebody else. But personally, it begins to tell us that this is what we are, this is what we should pursue, and it creates a reward-seeking behavior that is so foreign to what God would have for us. There is, God didn't create sex. God created intimacy, love, and sex as an expression of that. And as a man, I'd get laughed out of the room in most rooms in our society if I said that out loud. But when my wife is leaving me and we're falling out of love and all the expressions we use, and we never really understand that it's because I broke something and I broke it over time. And the repair of that was not rooted in vulnerability and true accountability and repair. It's not as mysterious as we think why so many things are going wrong in our marriages. Men, if we want sexual integrity, we've got to define that and understand what the definition is. Integrity is a strict adherence to a set of values that you have. And while it seems like this freedom to have this sexual promiscuity and this and that, the truth of the matter is you learn the hard way in life eventually. Discipline is the most direct line to freedom.
That's great. That's an awesome line. So let's get down to what you guys do. What do you actually do with what does demand disruption do?
Okay, so we do a lot. So I'm going to take it back to that timeline. Now, if you're listening to this, just give yourself a visual from 9 to 21, something like that. Okay. On one side, 9 represents our impact side of the house. Not just 9 years old, but children, parents, our faith community, caregivers, young people. We don't want to be there sitting across from a man in handcuffs because he just got arrested for solicitation of prostitution. But we realize that happens as the end result of a broken process of him seeking something else. And that process starts way earlier on the timeline. I'd much rather sit down with a 12-year-old who thinks that it is to be a man what he sees in pornography, what he sees represented, what somebody shared on Twitch, what he saw on Reddit as a young adult. These things that seep into every part of our society. We want that person to understand it for what it is, and what it is deception. The truth of the matter is that if I can trick you, I can sell you. And I love the quote from C.S. Lewis, man. I take it from an atheist who was trying to argue his way against God and ended up realizing, no, I'll just be a philosopher and I will win every argument relative to God because I know it's true, but I try to disprove it. And he says, an obsessed man offers very little sales resistance. I spent 25 years in sales. I know at my heart what that means. And so to understand what we do, what we want to do is be as proactive as possible. Fung Marquez is our associate director. He has a master's in curriculum, just a great educator. And so she really saw this vision of how do we get beyond a one-on-one or a room full of people or even a virtual workshop. Let's take this somewhere else. And so Christian, Fung, myself, we put our heads together and we began to develop something called Disruption University. It's an online, honestly, school-like experience where you're going through videos, you're going through step-by-step things, and it's explaining in a granular way exactly what not just trafficking, but that sexual integrity looks like, but knowing the truth about what society would sell you. And so as you move up that timeline, you start to get into teenagers, you get to young adults. A lot of our work right now is with surviving. I thought they'd hate us, Chris. I thought we really would be their enemy because we're working with the men who hurt them. We just did a panel. So we launched the the Demand Disruption podcast this year. Our incredibly talented producer, Krista Mayfield, started this, something really realized, something that we wanted to do a long time. And then my other son, Joseph, man, nothing like free labor. No, I pay this guy. He probably makes more than me. He does the editing. He does the directing also. They're an awesome team. The reason I'm bringing them up is we had an idea, something I was told years ago would never work. You can't do that. It won't work. And that was to sit on the stage with two buyers and three women.
Who have yeah, I saw, I saw this. It's,
oh, you
it
did?
Was, yeah. I watched it. Cause I interviewed Brian Schillingburg.
Oh yeah, Brian.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I interviewed him, and he sent me that podcast. So yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, really moving.
I think that podcast speaks volumes about what we can do when we just shut up and listen and learn from some survivor expertise,
mm-hmm.
not just invite them to our galas and ask them to give an ask.
Yeah.
That all too often is the extent of, we said, help us plan this. Like we were shoulder to shoulder planning with them. And what came of that was this incredible insight of understanding not just what demand disruption does, but why we do it and what segments of our society it's necessary to do these things. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. I appreciate that you saw it. I appreciate
that.
Yep.
We'll put that in the show notes for sure. We'll put that link in the show notes because it was fantastic.
You know, Brian, he's become a good friend of mine. We'll never be brothers because he's a Rangers fan.
Yeah, amen, brother. I got you there. I'm with you.
But we're as close as you can be.
Close as you can be. Yeah.
But he brought some truth that was just incredibly transparent. We so much so we even had him on as a guest one on one, and that's just a really beautiful interview. So as you look at what
he told me his story, and I think the worst thing I've learned about him is that he's a Rangers fan. So
exactly. Again, spoken like a guy who hosts a purity podcast. That's the worst thing. Oh, but I'm right there with you. If that characterizes the impact side of the house, what can we do to prevent talking to the guys on the back end? The truth is, those people exist. Those people mm-hmm. are in a broken process, and there wasn't somebody that intervened at 14, 15 years old. So somewhere in the middle of that timeline, I really want to underscore something. We don't teach parents how to be good parents. We teach them how to understand the world that their kid is seeing and the good things they're doing, how to amplify that in our workshops. Parents, man, you are outnumbered billions to two. So when mm-hmm. you talk to a kid and say, I love you, let me see your phone, please. That kid's got to understand, I love you, we're outnumbered billions to two, and I know what I see on a daily basis without looking for it, and I love you too much to allow that to happen to you alone.
Yeah. That's so
to be
good.
Able to teach somebody in a workshop, if they just lead with that, that was worth the workshop for us.
Yeah.
But what we find is coupling that with looking into your school district and wondering if they have maybe a mentoring program. Mandy Benedict serves on our board. She started a mentoring program from nothing in Pearland ISD and has over 500 kids that are getting one-on-one dedicated time with another adult 30 minutes a week.
Wow.
That, in many cases, it's the only one-on-one 30-minute solid, unconditional time that a kid gets. What has that got to do with what we're talking about? What it's got to do with it is their worth, their value.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't have that, well-meaning parents trying to keep the world together and keep the world out or at least balance what gets in, these kids are being told so many things about their worth and their value because the world has something to sell them.
Yeah.
Having that type of thing that's in the middle of our timeline, how do we reach young people?
Well, real quick on that part of the timeline, I think you said some things that are just, I mean, all those things are really powerful. And I think one of the things that you didn't say but implied, I think, is that when parents talk that way and when they have like this ministry, or I don't know if it's a ministry, but this option in Pearland that this person had started, that they have these
the
mentoring.
School district. Yeah.
Yeah. Like to me, what that does for a student, for a child, is it gives them freedom to talk about hard things.
Yes.
It gives them freedom to, it shows them that there's nothing too hard that's going on that I can't talk to someone about, whether it's my parent or a mentor. And look at the flow, how that changes. You get a 9 and 10 year old to start thinking that way. What you're doing is you're teaching them to think about their feelings how to process their emotions. And all of a sudden, the demand disruption thing, you're hitting it before the snowball starts down the hill, right? I mean,
I
that's
didn't
so
know.
powerful what you just
Right.
said. And I think that's like, I remember, now I blew it big time. But I do remember when I was talking to my son, because when he was 9 or 10 years old, I didn't want him to go down the road I was in. And this
Right.
was like years before my disclosure and everything. But when I remember talking to him about, sex, and I told him, I said, look, brother, we've talked about the most difficult, probably embarrassing thing that, a father son kind of thing you can talk about. I don't, it's not embarrassing. It shouldn't be embarrassing, but you know what I mean? And
Awkward. Yeah.
so you can, yeah, awkward. You can talk to me about anything. If we can talk about this, we can talk about anything. So, and I think that stuck with him. We've got a great relationship. I mean, we've had a lot of repair to do over the, 2018 timeframe, but it's been amazing to see what kind of interactions you can have with your kids when you address it early. So,
And
really powerful.
Amen to that, because you've got an example that a father is setting of transparency, not perfection. Newsflash. If you think you need to be perfect for your kid, and if you're not, you can trick them. You're not. They see it.
Yeah.
Be transparent. Show that empathy. One thing we tell people in our workshop, and it's just another version of what you just said, Chris. I mean, I love hearing that a dad has had that conversation, especially a dad who was struggling. See, I did it in a different way. I didn't have, it never took me down a road. Like I said, I've never been to a strip club, never bought sex. But porn was part of my consumption. And most of the time I was doing it, I didn't think there's anything wrong with it. And then I realized, no, it's changing my heart, my mind, and my relationship with my wife. And it is stealing from me.
Yeah.
Never, ever forget everything in life is a transaction.
Yeah.
What did you get for what you gave?
Yeah.
And porn will not let you know that until you've given so much and it's taken so much.
Wow, that's powerful. Yeah, that's good.
And then it brings me back to then, I didn't want my kid to know dad was struggling with this. So my oldest son had very different conversations than my youngest son did.
Yeah.
I told him how to treat a woman and how to honor God, love God, all these things, but I wasn't going to open that door. So yeah, I'm bringing it back to you being willing to have that conversation with your son, because one thing, it's so hard to break that barrier. It's going to be awkward. It's going to be weird. Acknowledge it. You leaned into it. Perfect.
Yep.
Because if
Yeah.
you can say to your kid, like, son, I love you, and I can't imagine what it was like to have a smartphone or to have any phone at your age, at 14,
Yeah.
I would have destroyed myself. Just lead with that, because
Yeah.
it's nothing like they're expecting you to say, and you're getting shoulder to shoulder instead of face to face. It's just a
Yeah.
little different posture. But yeah, no, man, I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's
so
awesome.
that takes us to really our intervention part, and that was the part that Bo and I worked on together. So we co-founded something called the Bridge Method. It was formerly the STAR project. The STAR program. This is when men are arrested for solicitation of prostitution. They then go before a judge. The judge says, you need to take a program, and then we'll lower your charges. Well, when we started this, Chris, it was a Class B misdemeanor to buy sex. You forged a check, state jail felony, but you want to buy a person? You shouldn't have done that. That's a little more serious than a speeding ticket, sir. Thankfully, we've made this progress from a Class B felony to Class A to a state jail felony. Sorry, Class B misdemeanor, Class A to a state jail felony now. But we need to couple that with something different than a down school. Down schools, by and large, don't work. I know this because I actually did a down school online. Again, I wasn't arrested. I was just watching a movie with my family. I'd seen it 5 times. And I was like, I wonder if I can go through this down school while I'm sitting here on my phone. I did an 8-hour course.
Define what that is. I don't know if
Okay,
I know exactly what that is.
Yeah. So down school is this buyer. It's supposed to be this rehabilitation program, so to speak, for sex buyers. They
Okay.
Say
So it's
prostitution court.
your at-home defensive driving course.
Basically is what it's become.
Yeah.
And I took an 8-hour course in 43 minutes. I tell this story on every podcast, because if you haven't seen one, then I hope you see this one, because it's a joke. And I can take it to a judge and say, I learned my lesson. And they'll drop my charges or lower my charges in a lot of cases at the DA's office. Because let's face it, this crime is not considered what it should be. It's better than it once was, but it's not what it should be. And I didn't get any resources. I didn't have any accountability. I didn't see within myself a part of this process that could be better, should be better, and is better. And I didn't have any part of my faith tapped into. Or if I don't have faith, something bigger than myself to defer to. That's what the STAR program now, the Bridge Method is. So as intervention, we've got these guys, and we'll do basically a class, 3.5 hour class that begins this accountability process. You work with somebody one-on-one, you meet once a week for an hour, and you're following our program, and then you've got somebody who's facilitating that. Most of the time, we're not talking about trafficking or prostitution. We're talking about manhood, and that means sexual integrity. That means purging, all the things that you thought you were keeping secret or you're holding on to. That means owning the things that you didn't get arrested for and nobody knows about.
And
the absolute disclosure. Going back a little further from that, that's kind of the end result. But before that, we're there on site when men are arrested. We work with Harris County, work with City of Houston, Montgomery County. So we're there when guys are on a sting operation. We call them reversals now, not sting operation or bias suppression. And we're there because we want to be that voice in the room that's not taking their information and booking them and telling them when they're going to see the judge. We want to start this conversation. What brought you here today? We talked to over 1,000 men at the point of arrest. And somewhere along those lines, I developed something called the escalation dynamic because I kept hearing these contributing factors. Pornography, strip club, webcam, massage, street prostitution eventually. I kept hearing these commonalities, and I started thinking, well, if a few are experiencing this, what about some? What about most? What about all? And so I created the stair step that's been the subject of a dissertation from Dr. Kevin Wilkinson Jr. called The Breeding of Wolves. And when he did this doctor dissertation, it was kind of that disproving idea. Well, let me look at this and see if this is valid. And as he went through it, he took his 20 years of law enforcement, which was his history, as well as data analysis with TABC, and saw, this is exactly what these men are experiencing, what's leading them to this direction. And part of that is the escalation from one acting out behavior to another. I mention that because that program is unique. And it is many times, sadly, the first time a guy has talked to another man about his struggle with pornography or sexual integrity. And here he is with these cuffs digging into his wrist. Can't feel his hands. He knows he's about to get processed. He knows he's going to go home and maybe lose his marriage and his job. And somehow we're able to have a conversation that goes deeper than one he's ever had before. That is one thing that I am, yes, somewhat proud of, being able to get to that level, but absolutely wrecked by, because that is the sad commentary on the state of manhood in our culture. It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, so good. Well, let's land the plane a little bit here. I'd love to know, how can people support you? How can the men listening support or, work with you or get involved with demand disruption?
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Any room I'm in, I usually tell the guys, I'm talking to those that are the hurt and the helpers. I'm talking to those that are damaged and those that want to defend others. And many times it's the same person, because we all have those moments. We all have those parts of our lives. And so if somebody heard this podcast today, first thing I want to do before we ask for help or money, I want to offer it. I want you to understand you are absolutely not alone. If you listen to this podcast, you probably know that because of Chris, because of Castamonia, because of this network of genuine accountability and empathy that y'all created. That's why it's such an honor to talk to people in this context. But if you ever need to reach out to somebody, Castamonia is there. We've got the resources. If you want to reach out to demand disruption, you're worried about somebody that you know, if you yourself are struggling, you can email us at defender@demanddisruption.org. An email will be met with absolute discretion. We only give an email out because the truth is people are more comfortable using that first step than hearing a voice and using their voice to talk about what they're struggling with. So that's one way. Now, as far as demand disruption itself, we cover quite a spectrum, as we talked about today. Thanks for giving me a little runway to run. You got my land a plane. I don't even know if I took off yet. but we're just driving to our destination.
I love it.
That spectrum is something that we absolutely are have come to have to acclimate in our culture to provide services. We never really started out for that wide of a casting a net. Follow us on social media. Follow us on Facebook, on if Facebook, Instagram, you'll find Demand Disruption. If you follow us, you're going to see that spectrum come to life. You're going to see interviews. You're going to see clips of our podcast. You're going to see real testimonials. But more than that, you'll also see ways that you can get involved. And then finally, I'm going to be real transparent here, man. When you're in anti-trafficking work, if you work with survivors, and God bless those who do, man, like I said, I just talked with one of my survivor overcomer friends, who's incredible, Tracy Dudley, here a little while ago. Organizations will fund you typically because they know the desperate need and just the hell that people have gone through in that life. When you talk about demand and that you work with buyers and those who might be fueling this behavior and acting out, people say, thank you, that's great. They're not reaching for the walkers. So funding can be a challenge. The more we're able to take our proof of concept over the last decade, the more we're able to truly expand that. Everything we've done is modular. So if you want to know more about demand interruption, how to bring it to your church, how to bring it to your community, we're happy to do that. And then the very last thing you ask, so there you go. I'm going to give it to you. Now, we just need to learn our lesson one day. We're not going to this year. We've got an event that we do on the 31st of January, the last day of Human Trafficking Awareness Month, because we believe it's the most direct way to fight trafficking is to talk about demand. And this is called the Love Disruptive End event. It's been a breakfast in the past, but the 31st falls on a Saturday, so we get to have a 4 o'clock kind of get together. It's going to be awesome. If you go to our website, demandinterrupting.org, you can buy tickets, you can become a sponsor. But in the past, we fit a lot into our hour and 15 minutes. And we're proud to host it this year with just an incredible group of survivors, some betrayed partners, people that are going to be able to give a perspective that you've never seen before. And it really does come back to the whole reason you and I are talking in this meeting. It is sexual integrity. It is accountability, but it is the freedom of knowing what intimacy and sex and sexuality really, really is. And that's at the core of it. So I really appreciate the opportunity to go meet.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, no, I appreciate you being here. Is there, I have one last question for you that's not related to any of this conversation, but before I
Hit
ask
it.
that, did I miss anything? Is there something else you want to share or a question I didn't ask you that you love to answer? Anything else you want to wrap it up with?
Yeah, I would say one of the things I've learned that's almost without exception is we are all people walking around with something that is an internal struggle. And so, whenever you feel the weight of your decisions and acting out behaviors, know that that's not a cause, that's an effect. As you listen today, as you listen, you need to go back to the archive and look at the other 128, what do you got, 126 episodes, something like that. Man, it's powerful. When you hear that, and you hear some of your own story and some of these testimonials and conversations, realize the part that you're struggling with is a result, it's not a cause. Let's go back to the cause, that internal struggle. Let's find out who we are in Christ. Remember that, be reminded of it, that we're forgiven. But beyond that there is help. And when we deconstruct it and we destroy that's causing us to act out, then we are going to act out in positive ways. We're going to have our integrity. We've got something that we call the legacy equation. And it is, I believe, I think I created it. I haven't seen it anywhere else. So we'll just go with that. It is your identity plus your purpose is going to equal your legacy in life. If you can get to the root of that identity, who you are in Christ, who you are as forgiven, who you are as anointed, who you are as chosen, it's going to change your purpose. I mean, just ask Paul, they used to call him Saul. You might have heard of him. Just ask him. And then his legacy is something that is obviously for the ages. You can leave a legacy. That's incredible.
That's awesome. And it's not too late. Doesn't matter who you are or what you become, it's not too
That's
late.
right. He's not.
That's awesome. Well, I ask anybody that I interview, I'm a storyteller. You were in sales. I'm in sales as well. And I love stories. And so one of the last questions I like to ask anybody I interview is if you're at a dinner party or just around some friends and stories are being told, What is your, do you have a go-to story that you like? I mean, it doesn't have to be funny, but just one, a story or a quip or something that your wife would be like, all right, this is the time, share it. Or maybe she's saying, please don't share it, but you love to tell that story. What is there a story that
There, I got four of them. So we're
you
gonna pick one.
have?
I'm just gonna
Right.
spin the roulette wheel. Okay, we
I
landed
love
on that one. Definitely not at a dinner party unless everybody's eaten already. But
it.
yeah, I love this story. I mean, I could go meaningful, but we've had a lot of heavy stuff. Let's just lighten up a little bit.
Yeah, I love it.
So my son, my oldest Christian, when he was in high school, was just an excellent actor. He got to go to state and did all this stuff. And so he did drama. So he's never able to really go on the vacation for different things because he's already committed. But one time we stripped him away right before this big play they had where he was the lead, and we got him to go on a cruise with us. And so we're walking up the gangway, man, and we're about to step on the cruise. And I did my research because I'm dad and I have to say stupid, annoying things. It's my responsibility to
That's
do
right.
that. And
Yes.
what I realized was this particular boat called the Triumph, you may have heard of it. There was a recent documentary of it. I said, as they stepped on, I waited. I saw the foot land, and I said, fun fact, this boat is 4 feet longer than the Titanic. Dad, why would you say that? It was funny until we tried to come home, and then we got stranded in the Gulf for 4 days. We were on that boat.
On that boat?
We're on that boat, bro. And not only were we on that boat, they had to stop the play for him. He was the lead, so they wait till he got back. I'm starting a new job, a new sales job. And so, dude, we don't have enough time for me to go into it, but I would tell you, we'll get coffee. Sorry, listeners, you're not getting the story. But dude, it was incredible. It was Lord of the Flies. Like I found a spot for us on the 12th floor. We had our own little community. Somebody woke me up at 2 a.m. because two guys were getting into it. I'm like, Joe, can you go break that up? I'm like, why am I the enforcer? And so I'm
Because
like,
you're 6'4".
how is that? So I'm sending guys away, and it was something else. But so to wrap it up, I get
Wow.
to my job orientation in
Yeah.
Chicago. We're sitting in the room waiting for them to call us in. They're going around, they're ice breaking. What'd you do this weekend? What'd you do this weekend? What'd you do this weekend? And I said, well, this weekend I was on a boat, and I was on a different boat, and then I was on a bus, and that bus drove from Alabama to Galveston, and then I got on a plane and I flew here. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, that cruise ship, I was on it. These guys are calling BS. They didn't believe me. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. And so I'm giving details, and the room was silent. And I was like, oh, well, this story entertains people and has some power to it. I'm gonna file that away. But
Yeah.
the very
Oh
last
my
thing, because I'm a
gosh.
Texan, here's the last thing. I took that story and I parlayed that into a Whataburger commercial. So me and my family are in a Whataburger commercial that played during the Olympics, the World Series, all of it.
No way.
Yeah, I was a bit of a Whataburger addict back in the day before they sold out, and that's another story. But yeah,
That is fantastic,
it's
man.
something else. Yeah,
Oh gosh, I bet you can't stand to even see the word triumph anymore. That's
I went
insane.
back and fished the picture out of the trash. I'm like, what are you doing, honey? Because my wife's like, I don't even want to hear that word. And I was like, we got to keep that. So, man, my son did a documentary on. He's 14, 15 years old at the time, something like that, 16 years old. And he had people coming up to, and he wrote a little sign, Tales of Triumph. He got our video camera, and he had like 25 people give their testimonial of what they went through while they're on. I was like, this kid, man.
That's crazy. That's cool. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that story, man.
Yeah, it
That's
was
super
fun.
fun.
Appreciate
That's
that.
cool. Joe, thanks so much, man, for your boldness, clarity, and the commitment to this fight. Your work is a great reminder to me, and hopefully to our listeners, that purity isn't just a personal issue. It's a community issue, a justice issue, and a call to protect the vulnerable. So thanks so much for being here.
In the valley where the flowers bloom. God is
Thanks for listening to the Purity Podcast. To learn more about Castamonia, meet other men in recovery, or share your thoughts on future episodes, please email us at puritypodcast@castamonia.org. And remember, as you go along this journey of recovery, you are not walking alone. We'll see you next time. God is in the high. God is